Welcome to WhiskeyCast, cask strength conversation featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 462 for January 19th, 2014. It's the second of two episodes from this weekend's Victoria Whiskey Festival in Victoria, British Columbia. Coming up in a few minutes.
When I see all these different takeovers, I get a little bit disappointed because there's one word that sticks out more than anything else, and that's inconsistency.
Richard Patterson of White & Mackay is waiting for word on his future as UK regulators consider a proposal to break up White & Mackay to satisfy competition concerns after Diageo bought a controlling stake in White & Mackay's parent company, United Spirits of India. I'll have more with Richard just ahead, along with highlights from the weekend in Victoria. I'll also have your voice, the calendar of events, and in the What I'm Tasting This Week department, my tasting notes for a classic from Gordon and MacPhail, all on this episode of WhiskeyCast.
WhiskeyCast. Proudly brought to you by Redbreast. The definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Join the Stillhouse at singlepotstill.com and receive an exclusive whiskey tasting journal.
Let's start off with the week's news. It's brought to you by Glenmorangie. Last month, we heard from the McAllen's David Cox about plans to auction one of the four super-sized decanters of the McAllen M at Sotheby's in Hong Kong. His goal was to break the record for the most expensive whiskey ever sold at an auction. The auction was held Saturday in Hong Kong, and David's goal became reality. The 6-liter Lalique decanter designed by Fabian Barone brought a winning bid of $631,850. That breaks the current Guinness record of $460,000 held by the McAllen 64-year-old in Lalique decanter that was auctioned at Sotheby's in New York in 2010 to benefit Charity Water. The proceeds from the auction will go to local charities in Hong Kong. Diageo and United Spirits have a date with India's Supreme Court Monday to appeal last month's Karnataka High Court ruling that blocked the sale of $10 million worth of United Spirits shares to Diageo. The regional court ruled in favor of creditors who claimed those shares were pledged as collateral for loans to Vijay Mallya's UB Holdings and Kingfisher Airlines, and that the sale took place without their consent. A lower court approved the sale of those shares last March. The Karnataka ruling did not block the entire deal between Diageo and United Spirits, but if it is upheld, Diageo's stake in USL would be cut by almost 7%, while Diageo still maintains operational control of the company. Meanwhile, the UK's Office of Fair Trading is still reviewing Diageo's offer to sell off most of USL's White & Mackay Scotch Whiskey unit. In November, the drinks giant proposed to resolve concerns over competition in the UK's blended Scotch whiskey market by selling off almost all of White & Mackay, except for the Dalmore and Tamnivoolan malt whiskey distilleries. India's Business Standard has reported that the United Spirits Board is also considering a proposal to sell the entire White & Mackay unit, including the two distilleries. United Spirits and Diageo have not commented on the report. One voice that's also been silent until now is Richard Patterson, White & Mackay's master blender and the public face of the company for most of his 44 years there. I sat down with Richard this weekend in Victoria for a wide-ranging conversation that included his answers to questions submitted by WhiskeyCast listeners. You'll be able to watch the entire interview on WhiskeyCast HD, but here's our discussion on the White & Mackay situation.
Your company, White & Mackay, is about to face its potentially fourth owner in the last 10 or 15 years. You are far more identified with this company than any of the previous owners or the current owner, Dr. Mallya.
Yes.
You are the face of the company. Is this getting frustrating, being in a position where you don't know from year to year what the stability of this company is going to be?
It's a very good question, and I'll be quite honest with you. I've been with the company coming up 44 years. I've seen 9 takeovers, and I'm on my 19th different boss. I don't know how many marketing people I've seen, but a lot in that time. So when I see all these different takeovers, I get a little bit disappointed because there's one word that sticks out more than anything else, and that's inconsistency. Because no matter what company takes us over, they have their own particular ideas. But, and this is the point that everybody should remember, no matter how many takeovers I've seen, the stability, the consistency of that blend, like White Mackay, all the blended whiskies and the single malts have never changed. My idea is always to create the very best and maintain that. So although we go through these very painful takeovers that are not only frustrating for somebody like myself, but you've got to think about the other people in the company, all the rest of the staff. It's a very unsettling time. But hopefully, and that's all I would say, hopefully when we do get that final takeover, we know what's happening on, it will settle down and we'll have a rosy future. We've never diminished in our demand for supplying great whiskies, but as you say, it can be very frustrating.
But the current proposal that's been put before the Office of Fair Trading would actually split this company up.
Well,
you'd lose Dalmore and Tam Nivulin if Diageo's proposal is accepted, and that's your baby.
Yeah, well, you know, you're saying that, but there's a lot of intricacies that are going on. I don't want to, you know, deep too much of it, but that is the proposal just now. There are many other hidden gems in between, and no matter which part of the world I go to, there's always somebody who's going to take over. The rumors are rife every trip that I go to, and every time there's a dinner in Scotland, people create more, you know, people are like that. You just, rumors fly. But hopefully at one day it will settle down. We'll know which direction, whether it will be split up. I personally do not hope it will be split up, but we cannot say at this present time. It looks a little bit uneasy.
Do you ever get just frustrated and say, I can't do this anymore, screw it, it's time for me to retire or go someplace else?
Yeah, well, funny you should mention it. Yes, sometimes I do. And sometimes even, you know, people have said to me, do this, will you do that? And I still have, you know, that sort of fulfillment of finishing on a high note with the company. So I still believe in it. I still think we're going to have to go through a number of challenges. But I think at the end of the day, we'll still come out looking good.
The instability has also caused another major problem. Richard told me he's been trying to identify his eventual successor for some time now, but has had to put that process on hold until White & Mackay's future is resolved. Once again, you'll be able to watch my interview with Richard Patterson this week at WhiskeyCast.com. In other news, Alberta's Highwood Distillers won 5 medals at Thursday night's 2013 Canadian Whiskey Awards here in Victoria. That's one of the highlights of what was likely Highwood's worst year on record. The distillery is located in High River, which was one of the hardest hit areas in last summer's flooding across southern Alberta. Highwood President Barry Wild accepted his distillery's medals Thursday night with a big smile and gave me an update on the recovery process.
Well, we are back up running, but it's certainly not at full speed. We think that this is probably another 3 or 4 months when we're full speed. We're somewhere around 50% of production. Of course, the insurance program takes a long time to get through that. We had a lot of damage to the equipment, machinery, scales, boilers. And that's all being replaced now as we speak. So it's going to be one full year before we're really 100% back in business. But it's been trying, but we've been able to move ahead. And the lucky thing is that our whiskey was never damaged. We lost all our boxes. We lost all of our materials, desk, paper, foot, case goods. But the whiskey was not damaged. So, you know, I guess there's somebody looking out for us. So that makes this evening all the more special to be recognized for the efforts that we've done.
How far did it set you behind in bottling that whiskey to get it out to market, though? I know you've had some issues with supply too, right?
Yeah, probably close to 6 months. We're finally getting back some into the marketplace. We just couldn't bottle. Everything was contaminated and compromised. So it took a lot of work to get all that. We are back producing whiskey and putting some into the market right now.
And how are your people doing?
You know, they've done really well, because not only were we affected at work, a lot of them had homes that were damaged, didn't have a home to live in. We retained all of our staff. We paid all of the staff through the flood. They've been wonderful, you know, and without good staff, it's hard to do a good job. So we've been lucky with the staff.
What did you learn from this that'll help you the next time this happens? Because in a town called High River, that river has flooded a number of times over the years. What did you learn from this that'll help you the next time?
Well, a few things we're learning really quickly is that the bottling line and all of our stuff has to be off the floor. You know, we need to move everything. We've run all of our electrical at 4 feet now, putting in new racking for the finished goods, lifting our main bottling line up 4 feet, so mitigating all of the potential losses, and that helps with our insurance premiums as well. But there's a lot of work and a lot of things you can do for that. And we're trying to get that done within the 1 year as well, so that we can buy insurance, because we're not sure that there is a insurance to be had anymore there, and the premiums are going to be extremely high. So a lot of work to mitigate some of the losses, potential losses, to help with premiums going forward.
Might you have to move the distillery?
No, we've decided when it happened, we'd fix it, we'd clean it, we'd repair it, and it was probably about the same to do that as to move. We have faith in that the city's going to look after berms, that type of thing, around the distillery and around the town. They're dredging the rivers. So we think that going forward that we should be okay, that the town is looking, and the province is involved as well. So there's a lot of support so that this doesn't happen again. And we're 40 years strong in High River, and we'll stay there.
Four people died and 100,000 were forced from their homes in what's being called Canada's most expensive natural disaster. Jess Graber is back in the whiskey business. He founded Stranahan's Colorado Whiskey in Denver, then sold it a couple of years ago to New Jersey-based Proximo Spirits. His new venture with Proximo is called Tin Cup, a high rye content bourbon that's cut with Colorado water. There's no official connection with Stranahan's, and while the whiskey is being bottled in Denver, there's no word on where the bourbon is actually being distilled. Tin Cup is named for a Rocky Mountain mining town. The whiskey will be available at first in Colorado, Arizona, Texas, New York, California, Washington, and Illinois. And finally, Suntory's acquisition of Beam was the week's biggest news story, but it was not Suntory's only acquisition. Morrison Bowmore Distillers has bought the Harbor Inn Hotel and Restaurant in Bowmore. The inn will continue to be open for guests, along with Bowmore's self-catering rooms next to the distillery, but it'll also be used for hosting distillery visitors. There's no word on the price, but I'm suspecting that it was substantially less than the $16 billion that Suntory is paying for Beam. However, the view of Loch Indal from the Harbor Inn is priceless. You can keep up with the latest whiskey news all week long at whiskeycast.com.
The news is brought to you by Glenmorangie. Introducing Glenmorangie Companter, the fifth release in the Glenmorangie Private Edition range. A complex maturation in both Burgundy and Côte d'Aron French red wine barriques. Find out more at glenmorangie.com.
Once again, this is a bonus episode of Whiskey Cast from the Victoria Whiskey Festival in British Columbia this weekend. Make sure you listen to the first episode, which features coverage of the Canadian Whiskey Awards, as well as the details on Suntory's acquisition of Beam. Your Voice is sponsored this time around by Highland Park, and there was a lot of discussion about the Suntory Beam deal at the bar and in between masterclasses here at the Hotel Grand Pacific this weekend. Here are just a few of the comments.
Well, the whiskey business is a business before anything else. And as a longtime whiskey drinker who spent 3 weeks in Scotland this spring, the impact of the large corporations buying smaller distilleries is a sad homogenization of the business, I mean, in my opinion, and also a loss of the principles that Bruichladdich was recently bought, and they're pushing them from 600,000 liters to 1.5 million with some of the oldest distilling equipment in the world. And so Beam is a big corporation. They were part of this game for a long time. Suntory is an interesting player because Scotch whiskey is always associated with Scotland. And so it was interesting when Beam got into it and started buying things. Suntory, I understand, is a quality-based company that's been interested in producing quality products. And so it's my hope as a whiskey fan that they'll allow the distilleries to continue to produce unique products, to continue to try out different finishes, Sauterne, you know, Tempranillo, these other kinds of finishes, which are what make the whiskey interesting to me. That after you have 5 bottles, when you're going from 5 to 100 bottles, then you're looking for something special, something that you tried somewhere that you really like. And I hope that as it becomes a business of a few huge players, that they still allow heterogeneity, they still allow the little boutique, the principle-based people to survive.
You know, I know so little about it in terms of the mechanics, but I like the fact that Suntory is such a appreciator of quality. They keep things true to tradition and heritage, and But I think it's going to be good for them all around and likely good for the industry.
I think it's going to be great for whiskey, especially for Canadian whiskey. I think it's going to give them a real injection of cash flow to be able to maybe put Canadian whiskey on the lips of more people.
Does it bother you at all that products like Canadian Club are going to be Japanese owned now, essentially?
Not in the least. Suntory is a fantastic company. Every time that they've gone into a market, they've done more good than anything else for each of the distilleries that they've been able to inject some enthusiasm into. So I think it's a really, really good thing for whiskeys all around the world.
It doesn't surprise me, I guess. In the bigger picture, it seems like there's a lot of things that are happening. Larger seems to be better in some ways, but I guess I don't have a problem with it. I think it's okay. But I can tell you this, I've had more contacts from people who really don't pay much attention to whiskey, who have read about it and who think it's incredible about the amount of money, I think, more than anything, that's being spent on whiskey these days.
There's been a lot of chatter and a lot of discussion about a landmark American product like Jim Beam bourbon going into Japanese hands and people saying they'll never buy another Jim Beam product again. Does that bother you? Where do you sort of see that coming down?
It does not bother me. I think today, in the world market that we live in, anything's possible, anything can happen. I can remember many years ago when the cars, automobiles started to diversify. I grew up just south of Detroit in a small town called Monroe, Michigan, where I knew every car that was being made. Today, I couldn't tell you what car comes from where. And I think it's the same with whiskey. As long as the product is good, it's good quality, and I enjoy it, it's fine with me.
In order, we heard from John Lark, Dave Mason, Valerie Bradshaw, and Denny Hammer. I'd love to hear what you think. You can always post your comments on the Your Voice page at whiskeycast.com, or you can email me directly. My email address is comments@whiskeycast.com, and Your Voice is sponsored this time around by Highland Park.
My name is Daryl Haldane, Global Brand Advocate for Highland Park. Go onto our website at highlandpark.co.uk and upload your photo at Inner Circle to have your face on the walls of the Highland Park Distillery.
Time now for the calendar of events brought to you by Laphroaig. First off, we'll be getting the schedule of events for this year's Spirit of Speyside Festival in the next few days. Tickets go on sale through the festival's website on Saturday, February 1st, and usually sell out quickly. The festival is May 1st through the 5th. The Bourbon Classic is coming up on January 31st and February 1st in Louisville. Reserve 101 in Houston will host a Glenmorangie Valentine's Day dinner February 14th. Woodford Reserve Distillery will also be offering Valentine's Day dinners and lantern lit distillery tours that same weekend in Versailles, Kentucky. The Highlander Whiskey Festival is February 14th and 15th in Alkmaar, the Netherlands. And the Munich Finest Spirits Festival is the 14th through the 16th in Munich, Germany. The Winnipeg Whiskey Festival is February 21st in Manitoba, and Julio's annual Go Whiskey Weekend is the 21st through the 23rd in Westboro, Massachusetts. Those are just some of the events on the calendar at whiskeycast.com. It's brought to you by Laphroaig. Take a virtual distillery tour at laphroaig.com, and while you're there, become a friend of Laphroaig and claim your own square foot of Isla.
WhiskeyCast, brought to you by Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. In conversation with Michael Power, stock controller, Redbreast single pot still Irish whiskey.
I've been working in Middleton Distillery for the last 28 years. My job base is to organise deliveries of the cereals that are used to make Redbreast. Also, I have to be very mindful of the quality of the cereals coming in, such as the barley and the malt, which are specifically used for Redbreast. We're very mindful of the continuity of supply and the continuity of quality, and we use grain suppliers from the Munster area, which is one of the best growing areas for barley in Ireland. I have been dealing with basically the same people, such as Henry Goods and Pat Den, who have been supplying us with barley. It's usually spring barley going back all those years. Over the years, I've grown to like Redbreast more and more. It's because it's like the distillery itself. Something has developed with me. When you've tasted other whiskies, you learn to drink whiskey, and then later on, when you want more complexity or you want something more from a whiskey, tend to go to whiskies like Redbreast. Redbreast is unique because of the way it's made. In the traditional way, the pot stills would have been the traditional way to make Irish whiskey.
Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Those in the know Redbreast.
This time around on Whiskey Cast In Depth, more highlights from this weekend's Victoria Whiskey Festival. Canadian Club's table was in a corner, but the whiskey is getting a lot more limelight these days, with 4 medals in the Canadian Whiskey Awards. If you've tasted the flagship Canadian Club Premium recently, you may have noticed a bit of a difference. It's not the CC that you grew up with. The whiskey is about 6 years old still, but Canadian Club's Tish Harkus explained that some changes made a few years ago are just now reaching us.
When we became part of Beam in 2005, the company invested in new wood. Now, new wood to us is a once-used white American bourbon barrels, but they invested in a lot of the barrels. So what happened is you have Canadian Club Premium whiskey going into once-used white American bourbon barrels. What the end result is, you're going to get much more caramel and toffee and vanillas that's coming out of this wood, because our previous owners, the barrels were getting too exhausted. With Beam, we use the barrels for 4 cycles. So we're talking about CC Premium. We're going to use the barrels for 20 years, all right, before we have to sell them off to another company. So these barrels are like fresh wood, a lot of caramels, a lot of vanillas, a lot of toffees. So CC Premium, people that have rediscovering CC Premium, because people that have drank CC for the last 50, 60, 70 years are saying, what have you guys done differently? What is different about CC Premium and why does it taste so damn good? Say, because of the wood. The wood characters in this product is so important. People just think that, a lot of people think that, making a whiskey is just about blending a certain amount of rye grains and putting it into a barrel, and then you have to have the right amount, the right ratio of grains, you have to put it into the right wood, and that's when you're going to get a super premium whiskey.
Now, I see something on this table that I have not seen in a number of years, the 20-year-old Canadian Club. Where did this come from? Because nobody said anything about this one coming back.
This is a giant sleeper, this one here. CC 20-year-old premium, a giant sleeper. Very, very limited edition of this. There is a limited edition across Canada. I'll tell you one thing. My job as global ambassador, I love. To be a forecaster with this company, I wouldn't want. You don't have a crystal ball in front of you, and you really don't know how much whiskey you should put away. But the forecasters 20 years ago now, almost 22 years ago now, put away a certain amount of whiskey. And again, it wasn't enough. It wasn't enough Canadian Club whiskey, because the demand for this CC 20-year-old whiskey is more than what we put away.
I had the chance to taste the current Canadian Club Blind as part of the Canadian Whiskey Awards judging and compared my notes to those for the older version. I'll have the verdict later in the What I'm Tasting This Week department. Duncan Taylor's new Black Bull Kylo blend is about the same age as CC Premium and made its North American debut here in Victoria. Black Bull has been sold in 12 and 40-year-old versions for some time now, but Duncan Taylor's Peter Curry told me that Kylo is a big part of the brand's long-term future.
It's a no-age statement, Kylo, but mainly five to six-year-old whiskies. The blend that we've made for this is 30% malt whiskey. Lots of great young malts like Tormore and Milton Duff and Glenallachie that we're using in the blend. 70% grain, but it's bottled at 50% alcohol. So it's non-chill filtered, no artificial colouring, and bottled at 100 proof. 100 proof has always been the signature of Black Bull. And I'll be rolling this out in America in the next couple of weeks. Big focus, big push on the mixologists wanting to make whiskey cocktails, but with the extra strength, with the 100 proof strength on this, it's going to stand up to being used in cocktails. You'll be able to use it, but still taste the whiskey. Which was important to us, and it's really a malt drinker's blend, big bold flavors, lots of fruitiness, lots of kind of stewed plums and rhubarb, and nice amount of sherry casks in there as well. So just everything you expect from Black Bull, big, bold, and powerful.
And this is really sort of the foundation for getting the distillery going, right?
Yeah, well, it certainly is part of the plans that we have for the distillery. You know, I think Ewan's told you before, it's the distillery is going to have pot stills, but we're also going to have column still. So we'll be making malt and grain, and obviously with having a younger Black Bull, it means that we will be able to start using the malt and grain earlier. We're not going to have to wait 10 or 15 years before we can bottle the first whiskies. We can use it in our blends. And, you know, the Black Bull blend is does very well internationally. It sells really well in France. It does well in Scandinavia. Does well in America and Japan. So, you know, we're going to be hopefully growing that with a reasonably priced younger Black Bull expression. So it's exciting.
By the way, the name Kylo comes from the breed of bulls that appears on the Black Bull label. Now, those whiskies are about 6 years old. Let's turn to one that's 60 years old. Glenfarclas will be releasing a 60-year-old expression this spring. While it wasn't here in Victoria to be poured, George Grant was more than willing to talk about it.
Well, we finally bottled it. We've got it bottled, we've got the strength, we've got the numbers, and then the plan is to launch it in the beginning of April.
Tell me about the whiskey itself.
Whiskey itself is, it's 60 years old, first and foremost. It's going to be a cask strength. We're going to launch it in 6 different markets. There's in total 360 bottles, 60 bottles for each market. The whiskey itself is just phenomenal. You know, it's just still such a fresh whiskey. It's come from a sherry butt. So the whiskey is what you class as a typical Glenfarclas.
What are you going to sell it for, or have you decided yet?
It's hopefully going to retail for about £10,000 a bottle.
How does this compare to the Queen's cask that you released with Speciality Drinks last year, which was a 59-year-old?
Obviously, you know, it's come from a similar sort of batch of casks. But obviously, you know, once we've sold to other people and once we keep for ourselves, obviously we're going to keep the best for ourselves.
What else do you have coming out in 2014 that people should know about?
2014, we're continuing with the family cask range. We're going to continue releasing new releases of them. We've got another 26 family casks coming out this year. We're also bringing out a 1966 Fino cask bottling. It's not finished in Fino cask. It's been in the Fino casks its entire life. So that's going to be, a 48-year-old whiskey.
You'll find my tasting notes for the Queen's Coronation Glenfarclas at whiskeycast.com. Now, 45 minutes or so west of Glenfarclas, Graham Yunson has been making his mark at Tomatin since taking over for Douglas Campbell a couple of years ago. Graham poured the component casks that go into the lightly peated Kubakan malt during his master class here in Victoria, and at least one of those components could be the focus of a second version of Kubakan later this year. Graham is looking at several ideas.
By doing this really top-end quality casks with this lightly peated malt, it gives us a different expression. But it has been so well met all over the world whenever we've launched it that there's no point in just having the one expression, I don't think. We need to look around and see what we can do. We do potentially have as little as 4 or 5 casks of older stock which was peated by accident. I'm not quite sure how it happened, but having spoken to one of our mashmen who's been 25 years with the company, he remembers a load of malt coming in that they were convinced was peated, but the maltster said, no, it wasn't. But he said he could smell it in the distillery. So this may actually be some of that is still in cask in the way it's not been used. But it's small volumes, but that may be an older expression of Kubakan that could come out. And then, you saw here today, some of the constituent parts are absolutely fantastic. In their own right, so the heavily sherried Oloroso sherry finish, or Oloroso sherry matured, because it's a full maturation, maybe a standalone version of Kubakan, you know, that people, certainly the guys and girls here today, absolutely loved it, you know. So I might go back and explain that to the marketing department back at the distillery, that look, you know, if we've got sufficient of this, that could be another line extension, just to give people more opportunity to try different expressions. Because at the end of the day, that's what whiskey's all about, is trying different recipes, different formulas, to see what you like. And there will be a nice whiskey out there for someone, you know. So we all have our own favourites, but there's no harm in having lots of favourites.
Maybe even a cask strength version?
You never know. Watch this space, basically. Watch this space.
I'll have an in-depth interview with Graham Yunson on an upcoming episode. Now, Springbank has gone through its own changes in the last several months. Frank McCarty retired as production director last summer, and Gavin McClacken is in charge now. But Ronald Watson told me there haven't been many noticeable changes.
It's a Springbank from Barolo wine casks, 9 years old, 4 years in bourbon, followed by 5 years in Gaia Barolo casks from Italy. It's the latest Wood Expression release.
And then you also decided to do something different with an Australian Shiraz cask for Longrow, right?
Yes, we out of the Wood Expression series that we've done over the years, we've done a number of different cask types with Longrow, with Springbank, with Hazelburn. And the most popular Longrows we did were Burgundy wine and Barolo casks. So we've decided to make a red wine cask Longrow a regular part of the range. And we managed to get some casks from an Australian winery called Longrow. So when we heard there was a Longrow winery, it made sense to buy some casks for the Longrow whiskey. So we've just bottled a Shiraz cask from that vineyard. Very nice. The tannins and things from the wine really draw out the saltiness and the peatiness and the smokiness in the whiskey. Really interesting stuff.
When's it available and where?
It's available in most of the major markets already, the USA, the UK, most European countries. It's coming to Canada within the next couple of weeks.
How are things going at Springbank since Frank retired back at the middle of last year?
Thankfully, they're still going pretty well. Frank retired on July 31st and then came to work on the 1st of August as normal. But the benefit is now we get his experience, but we get it for free. So as typical Scots, we can't really complain about that kind of thing. But Frank laid down a lot of rules or instructions, if you like, before he retired. So we continue just to do what Frank was working on before he retired. And he still lives in Campbelltown, so we can pick up the phone anytime we like and ask him anything we need to do.
When he's not consulting all over the world, right?
Exactly. He's in China at the moment, sourcing equipment for a new Australian distillery he's helping to build. So when we can get hold of him, all well and good.
And, of course, we wish Frank the best in his new consulting career. Those are just some of the highlights from this weekend in Victoria. Thanks to all of the volunteers who organize the Victoria Whiskey Festival each year for making it one of the world's best whiskey festivals. Next year will be the 10th edition of the Victoria Whiskey Festival. Tickets go on sale the first Saturday in November each year, and they sell out fast. Let's start off the What I'm Tasting This Week department with the Longrow Red that Ronald told us about. It's bottled at 53.7% ABV. Just 9,000 bottles are available worldwide. The nose has notes of red grapes, soft spices, and a hint of nuttiness. The taste is full of grapes, raisins, clove, and cinnamon, with touches of honey, nuts, licorice, and a good mouthfeel. But the finish is dry and short. I'm giving the Longrow Red an 84. Now let's look at the updated Canadian Club Premium. It's still bottled at 40% ABV, but a look back at my notes from several years ago for the older version shows some changes. The older version was much softer and much more delicate, but the new one's nose is spicier and more aggressive with allspice and a hint of nutmeg, balanced by butterscotch and honey. The taste has notes of nutmeg, cinnamon, honey, brown sugar, and just a hint of clove. And the finish is long with slowly fading spices. I scored the older version of Canadian Club Premium an 80 several years ago. The new version gets an 85. And finally, Gordon and MacPhail's Michael Urquhart always brings something special for his masterclass in Victoria. He did not disappoint us this year with a 1954 Mortlach single cask bottled at 58 years of age and 43% ABV. The nose is classic Mortlach, aromatic, rich, and robust with beef bouillon, baked fruits, honey, beeswax, roasted almonds, and mild spices. The spices build up slowly on the palate with cinnamon and clove on top of roast beef au jus, nutmeg, ginger, peach pie, and a hint of licorice. The finish is long and amazingly rich with a drying touch and a hint of tartness. I'm scoring the Gordon and MacPhail 1954 Mortlach a 96. I'll be adding these tasting notes, along with the other whiskeys I tasted this weekend, to the searchable list of more than 1,100 different whiskeys at WhiskeyCast.com. That's also where you'll find links for WhiskeyCast HD, including the interview with Richard Patterson, and WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings episodes, the latest news and the calendar of events, along with a complete archive of past episodes. The address is WhiskeyCast.com. And my email address for your questions and suggestions is comments@WhiskeyCast.com.
WhiskeyCast. Proudly brought to you by Redbreast. the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Join the Stillhouse at singlepotstill.com and receive an exclusive whiskey tasting journal.
Whiskey Cast is a production of Cask Strength Media, copyright 2014, and comes to you this weekend from the Victoria Whiskey Festival at the Hotel Grand Pacific in Victoria, British Columbia. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.